Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of teaching contractors how to run profitable businesses. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable contractor. A few months ago, Bill Kennard, VP of Grandy & Associates, was blessed to have the opportunity to attend a keynote address presented by Michael Langenhorst. The topic was change. Change is inevitable. A good captain always keeps ahead of his vessel, continually gathering and evaluating information from every available source to anticipate dangerous situations well before they arise. If you want to learn how to navigate change, learn from those who have already walked the walk. Michael has walked that walk and is going to briefly share the core of his keynote address. Following his presentation, Bill Kennard will interview Michael to pinpoint some specific ways change should be handled within the organization. Michael graduated with a B.S. in Microbiology and Public Health in 1976 from the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh. Having spent his entire career in the rendering industry, Mike came to Green Bay in 1989 when he accepted the position of Executive Vice President with the Animax Group and in 1997 was named President of the company. He orchestrated the growth and strategic vision of this multifaceted agricultural company, positioning Animax as a respected leader in the industry. In 2005, Animax merged with Sanimal of Montreal, Canada, and became Sanimax. Mike has spent the last 4 years navigating the integration of his industry leader as the CEO of the new company. Mike is past president of both the National Renderers Association and the World Rendering Organization. He is on the board of the National Renderers Association and the World Rendering Organization and chairman of the Legislative Action Committee, along with other industry-related boards. Mike represents the industry at various national and international venues, lobbying for the United States agricultural interest. Mike also sits on the board of directors of M&I Bank, Trudell Trailer, Romo Printing, and various advisory committees. Has Mike led his companies through change? You bet he has. With all that's going on within the trades industry today, the presentation might just be of significant value to you and your company.
Well, thank you for that introduction and allowing me the opportunity to speak to this group. I had the opportunity also within the last month to speak to a CEO breakfast roundtable at St. Norbert College, and I was asked about a year ago to choose a topic. And at that time, I chose a topic of navigating in times of change. Well, who here hasn't experienced change in the last year? I know that you've all been affected one way or another by the economic situation. Some of you may have had personal or family health situations, the addition of children or grandchildren, and some of us have even entered the world of retirement during that time. Change is nothing new to many of us, but the way we view and handle it determines our success or failure, our happiness or our sadness. For those of you that have had a chance to get to know me, you know that I love boating and fishing. It's always surprised me how many of the things that allowed me to be successful in business also applied to the world of boating, thus the title of my presentation, Navigating in Times of Change. Marine navigation blends both science and art. A good navigator gathers information from every available source, evaluates the information, he determines his fix, and compares that fix with his predetermined position. A captain constantly evaluates the ship's position, anticipates dangerous situations well before they arise, and always keeps ahead of his vessel. Navigation methods and techniques vary with the type of vessel, the conditions, and the captain's experience. Navigating a fishing boat on a Fox River differs from navigating a pleasure craft on the Great Lakes, and both differ greatly from navigating a naval vessel. The captain uses the methods and techniques best suited to the vessel and the conditions at hand. And so it is in life and in business. Those that are true navigators know where they are and where they want to go. They lay out a course and adjust as conditions change. I've had the pleasure of leading a company by the name of Animex, and a multinational agricultural company during times of great change, both internally and externally. In a period of 14 years, we were able to quintuple margins, quintuple EBITDA, triple the number of employees, and show greater than a 12% compounded annualized growth rate to a company in a so-called mature industry. This also took place in spite of many changes that we had no control over. For instance, I'm sure that many of you have heard of BSE or mad cow disease. In 1996 and 97, we lost entire markets both domestically and internationally and had to make very rapid adjustments to the way business was done. In 1999, the Asian economic flu hit, and we lost the Korean, Taiwanese, and Chinese markets for hides and skins and needed again to adjust the normal way of doing business. One of the businesses we got into was the production of gelatin bone, an important raw material in the production of photographic film. Wouldn't you know that a few years later, the digital world came into being, and the demand for gelatin went down dramatically. And the last, our industry was never involved in any government tax credit or subsidy programs until we entered the biodiesel business. And at that time, we again had to very quickly learn how to fight for and operate in this new arena. In 2005, we had an opportunity to join forces with Sanimal, one of the premier companies of our industry from Montreal, Canada. At the same time, we acquired a commodity trading company in Guelph, Ontario by the name of Bipro Marketing. The combination of these three became what is now known as Sanimex, a company I was given the opportunity to integrate. We had 13 locations, 21 facilities, and 1,200 employees. Just think about it. Three companies, three languages, three systems, and three cultures. Talk about change. It wasn't a linear situation with three variables we talked about, but rather was exponential with 3 × 3 × 3. So how were we able to do it? I always considered organizational leadership as a four-part process, and I'd like to take the next few minutes to share my thoughts with you. The first thing we needed to understand was our crew and how change affected them. A tool that we used in the hiring process, as well as employee development, was the DISC profile. There are many other tools available, but this is the one that, when once understood, was easy for us to use. Some of us, such as me, thrive on organized chaos. For others, if they don't park in the same parking spot every day, they have a major issue. These tendencies show up very quickly in the DISC profile. The D stands for dominance, someone that's to the point, decisive, strong-willed, enjoys challenges and change. The I stands for influence. These people are optimistic, outgoing, they're social, they love teams, and they don't care if they make a mistake as long as you love them. The S stands for steadiness. These people are empathetic, cooperative, supportive, and helpful. They avoid conflict and change. The C stands for conscientiousness, concerned, cautious, and correct. They're focused on details and quality and are often accused of having paralysis by analysis. This tool was very effective in letting us know how someone would react to change and whether the role they were being asked to fill would coincide with their psyche. We knew that we were an organization of constant growth and change, so we needed a good number of people that were comfortable to make decisions quickly, or high Ds, but we also needed good information to make the decision, which were the Cs, and plenty of people to get the work done, the S's. In a normal population, about 10% of the world are D's and 65% are S's, so we had to make sure that we're not putting S's in a position where they would fail. Once we had our team in place and got to know each other, the second thing that we did was to start with the basics, knowing who our organization was, our mission, which became our vessel, how we do things, which are our values, which became our compass, and where we were going, our vision, which became our chart. So our mission defined who we are. And we, as a company, stated that we provide environmentally responsible solutions for agribusiness and the food industry. So everyone knew that if anything we looked at would fit that bailiwick, it was part of something we were interested in looking at. The next were the values, or how we do things. We only had four of them, and we kept them simple. The first was fair and ethical behavior. And then we would also outline what it would look like. Our actions result in an organization that treats others as we ourselves like to be treated. Second value is a sense of accomplishment. Our actions result in Sanimex Group employees that feel a sense of job fulfillment and accomplishment. The third was pursuing excellence. Our actions result in customers that choose us as a preferred provider of goods or services. And the fourth was productive relationships. Our actions result in strong and productive relationships in a work environment in the community. So now that we knew who we were and how we do things, now we needed to know where we're going. And that became our vision. The vision was, by living our core values, we're going to position ourselves for growth opportunities, develop new markets for our finished products while diversifying the company without leaving the core business. Sounds a lot like a growth company. So once these were established, we had to make sure that the entire crew knew them also. It became part of the role of every leader in the organization to make sure that these points were hammered home every top opportunity that we had. They weren't just placards on the wall, but truly became part of the culture and dictated the course we were to follow. You see, most organizations talk about their vision and values, but really do not implement them. What you get then is inconsistency and confusion. However, if you truly develop your message and make sure everyone understands it, something amazing happens and you can predict the behavior of the organization. One of my favorite comments was letting everyone know that they were all capable of making a decision that affected their company and their job. All they had to do was make sure that they use the values to make the decision, and it would never be wrong. There might be others that could be a little better, but they would always be supported. The other end of the message was just as strong also. If you chose not to live by the values of the organization, you better be prepared to leave immediately. The third leg of our stool was to truly understand the process of change and how we react to it. For minor change, it also became part of the culture, and people had to be very comfortable. But for any major change, strong leadership was needed to lay out the course and keep everyone confident. For the perfect storm, we tried not to be idiots. So for this to become a part of the culture of our company, we enlisted the help of a gentleman by the name of Ken Newtek, someone that I'm sure many of you have gotten to know over the years, and if you haven't, you should. Ken's specialty is leadership development, and one of the very important chapters in his repertoire is change management. And I'd like to share a few of the concepts with you that we utilized. Ken referred to change as a cycle, or a circular event. There are four quadrants in any type of change, with the first being the beginning phase. In this phase, people realize that something needs to be changed. There's some pain or frustration, and everyone wants to start throwing out ideas and solutions. But it's critical not to get ahead of yourself until you have identified what the expectation should be and to truly define the issue or problem that needs to be addressed. Something that I learned from Ken, which I found to be true, is the problem is never the problem. Most issues are only symptoms, so you have to have the group talk about the real issue. Once the true issue is identified, then you can then identify the reason to change and then come up with solutions. At this point, it's critical to make sure there's buy-in and that the change is communicated effectively. You also see the behavior start to take place with the D's ready to be done with the change tomorrow, the S's nervous or afraid, the C's questioning their assumption, and the I's telling everybody it'll be okay. But just be aware, anxiety will increase. You're now in the second quadrant where the change starts occurring. Hopefully you have a clear roadmap for the change, but in reality this is never true. So there is experimenting and risk-taking by different groups in the organization, all making perfect sense to them individually, but when brought together creates confusion and questioning such as, why in the heck did I ever do this? What am I going to do now? This is a tough part because all of a sudden the major problem that you had to change for originally doesn't look nearly as bad as a solution. But persevere. Once through the confusion stage, you'll enter the breakthrough phase and start seeing successes. People will be re-energized, improvements will continue to be made, and you'll enter the fourth phase, the competence phase, where the new change becomes standard practice and part of the culture. And this will also breed a feeling of continuous improvement throughout the organization. So now we have our vessel and our crew, we have our course charted, and we know our destination. And we know how the ship will handle during times of change. So things should be easy, right? Not quite. We still need to understand the weather, the sandbars, the shoals, and the obstacles we might encounter on our trip. You can't wait until you're confronted with a bridge that's closed for the evening, and confronted by 10-foot waves, or worse, major shoals or another vessel in your path, or you can be in major trouble. If you recall earlier, I mentioned that a good captain always keeps ahead of his vessel, continually gathering and evaluating information from every available source and anticipating dangerous situations well before they arise. The same is true of any successful business leader and is the fourth leg of the stool. You have to understand the markets that you compete in, your customer base, your competition, your financial condition, government regulation, new products and services. You must always be tweaking and improving the vessel you have and looking for ways to make her run smoother and faster and hopefully add more on your voyage. In other words, you better know the playing field like the back of your hand. And if you don't, buy a map. And by that I mean get someone to help you. Surround yourself with others that are able to compensate your areas of weakness and professionals to pilot you through areas you're unfamiliar with. So now you should be all set for your voyage. You and your crew are prepared, your vessel's ready, your charts and your electronics are set, and you leave port. You have great weather and smooth sailing. Smaller positive changes confront you, and your crew minimally adjusts your course, and you continue on and find safe harbor. Your crew is in good spirits, morale is high, you're making money, and life is good. All of a sudden, the weather changes. A major customer goes out of business, a market changes, there's a new competitor, or new government regulations come into play. The wind picks up, waves get higher, and you notice obstacles in your way on your radar. Can you control the situation? No. But can you control the outcome? Yes. This is when all of your preparation takes over. Hopefully, most of the dangers have been anticipated, and you travel around them or head into the wind and wait for the storm to pass. This is also the time that everyone will be looking at how you as a captain react. Do you get excited or do you remain calm knowing that you've planned for this? Do you really live the values that you espoused, or do they change when things are tough and cause others to lose faith in you? Do you trust your vessel and crew, or do you feel that I have to do it? It's times like these that others decide who you really are and if they'll continue to follow you. Change is a great opportunity for all of us. We don't always like it, but the way that we control its outcome is the difference between success and failure. So that's it. You're now ready to navigate in times of change. Know your crew, your vessel, and how it will handle. Lay out your course and stay ahead of your vessel. However, there's one other tool that's critical to have in your change management toolbox, and it's your attitude. I'd like to end with something that I've carried with me for many years. I found it printed on a wall in a restroom in New Orleans when we were there for the Super Bowl in 1997. In fact, I had it printed and laminated for our employees. It was written by Chuck Swindoll, and it's titled Attitude. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude, to me, is more important than facts. It's more important than the past, the education, the money, the circumstances, than failure, than successes, than what other people think or say or do. It's much more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, or a home. The remarkable thing is we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we'll embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that's our attitude. I'm convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% of how I react to it. And so it is with you. You are in charge of your attitudes.
Well, thank you, Mike. As you know, I had the opportunity to attend that program, this original presentation that you did at St. Norbert's College. And there were several good questions that came up after that program. And I thought we'd share some of those with the group here today. One of those questions surrounded you had talked or mentioned in your program here that you use the DISC profiles or DISC assessments. When you get those employees that, well, you think this guy is, he's got what it takes. You know, your gut tells you he's right, but then you use a tool like a DISC assessment, and it comes back that maybe it's not a great fit. Is it wise to basically think that you can change this individual or make them fit within your system?
Well, Bill, that's really a good question, because I think anyone that's used these types of tools has been confronted by this. The DISC profile is only one of many different tools that was used in the hiring process and also the developmental process. But I think it was proven over and over that if the assessment put someone in a particular area, it was pretty much right on. And if you try and change someone's behavior patterns, it doesn't work. So I think we found deep down that our guts would tell us one thing, and sometimes these profile reports would tell us something else. We learned we were much better off to follow the profile pattern than our guts at that time.
Well, Mike, you know, on that same vein, you mentioned that you use these assessments in the developmental process. If we've got somebody who, you know, has potential, explain that process to us just a little bit that you may have used within your organization.
Well, if you remember what the four letters stood for, the D, dominance, I, influence, S, steadiness, and C, conscientiousness, it's really important that people understand themselves and why they do things or think about things the way that they do. If you have someone that's young and energetic and they have a very high dominance or a high D, they're going to look to others as being kind of pushy and ramrodding things, where in their mind they're just doing what they think is normal and right. So you have to let them know that they may come across in a different manner than someone that's I with influence or steadiness that just wants things to status quo. So it was really part of their personal development as well as their job development to understand themselves internally and so that they could adjust to other people that they were dealing with.
Well, thanks. Mike, I want to shift to a little bit different topic. One of the other things you talked about was this consistency, and really knowing your vision and where you're heading. How does that, talk a little bit more about how that impacts the behavior within the organization and how you can get your crew, your employees to deal with that change.
Well, again, one of the things that we found was until we had truly established the culture of the company, which includes the vision, values, and the mission, everyone has their own behaviors. They have their own values. And people are good people, and they're all working in what they think is the right direction. But individual behaviors will end up determining the values of the organization. And I think, truthfully, in the long run, for a successful organization, you need it kind of the reverse, where the values of the organization become part of the culture and values of the people. So if you look at it in two different ways, one is a triangle or a pyramid upside down, where behaviors at the top and small values. What we tried to do is end up with a company that was driven by the values at its base, and that really dictated the behavior, which was part of change, it was part of profitability, and the culture of the whole company.
Okay, that makes sense to me. One of the other things that comes to my mind is so many companies have that mission statement or they have that value statement, and it's a plaque that hangs on the wall, but it's really not something that's lived out by the company. And you mentioned earlier that when that's the case, that tends to create confusion within the company. How do you really instill that vision or that mission of the company throughout the rank and file of the company?
Well, you mentioned that it creates confusion or whatever, and I think it really almost creates animosity. I think people get upset when people talk about it once a year and they see that the company or the leadership themselves are really not living the values. So the way to really instill it is that at every opportunity that leadership had, we would talk about it. And we'd do goofy things, like I would ask, we'd have group meetings, and I would say, okay, I'd pick someone out and I'd say, okay, I'll give you $5 if you name one of the values. Or what's the mission of the company this week? And, you know, we made kind of a game out of it, and it really became part of the fun of really having the group together. So when I say it was part of the culture, it became part of the culture.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Again, you're right. So often we wind up seeing that, we talk about it, that once a year at the company meeting, but the leadership really doesn't live it. And really, I think really what you're saying is as you lead, they will follow. And so you need to lead living that mission statement and living that vision.
That's very true.
This change cycle, again, that was kind of an interesting piece of the puzzle. Now, because, again, when you talked about those four quadrants of the change cycle and some of the values and the pieces of that puzzle that's there, there's a really nice chart or a map that lays this out. And for those of you, download the attachment that comes with this program because it kind of lays that out and allows it to give you a visual of it. But, you know, as we're going through that, we've got the beginning phase, and then we've got the, I think you called it the confusion stage. Do you ever take a step backwards and decide that, okay, this really wasn't the right move for us, that maybe we need to do something different and really go back to the beginning stage?
That's what happens unless you truly understand change. What I talked about earlier is you're going to start second-guessing whether your reason for making the change is really worse than what the problem was in the first place. And the hardest thing to do is to be slow in making the decision to make a change or the reasons for it and to do it properly up front. And as I said, if you recall, the issue is never the issue. The problem is always caused by something other than what is apparent as the issue. So you need to truly understand the true issue up front, and that will dictate the reason for change. And once that's understood and people understand it, then you don't turn back.
Well, but okay. Then are you suggesting then that as we define that problem, that we involve or at least inform everybody in the company as to why we're making that change?
Well, the first thing, let's take an example. You're going to say, maybe my receivables are slow, and that's my problem. But you start looking into it, and you find out you're not billing until 15 days after you're doing the work. And you say, well, that's my problem. And then you look even further, and you say, you know, the trouble is I'm not getting the work cards back from the employees until 10 days after they're doing the work. And you find out you got 45 days before you're even sending out your invoice, and that's your problem with your receivables. So at that point, once you've identified the true issue, what the problems are and what the changes need to be, then you get the people involved that need to be involved. And if it's a company-wide initiative, definitely everyone has to know up front what's happening.
And why it's happening.
And why it's
happening. What the core issue was that you're trying to deal with.
Correct.
Well, good. When we're talking about this, the changes that we're making within a company, okay, we've defined it, we've decided who within the company needs to know about it, we've laid out the changes that are going to be made. How do we deal with really implementing that change? Because one of the things that we see happen so often is that we announce a change and we expect it to be done, and it's effective immediately. How do you deal with that issue realistically within a company?
It's a lot of work, and to really have a change become part of everyone's job at the time that it's happening, there has to be continuous communication, whether that's flow charts, whether it's weekly meetings, whether it's some method of measuring the change that's actually occurring, so that people can see where it is along the timeline of what you're looking for. And to go into a change, you know, if it's a minor change, that's pretty simple. But if it's a major change, you should have a timeline, just like any other project that you're working on. Any of the jobs that you do, you have timelines for, and you've got Gantt charts. Same type of thing can be set up on a change process. And, you know, if you have a weekly meeting with the group, if you have email outlets or whatever it might be, it's critical to make sure that the continuous communication occurs.
Communication, 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 isn't it?
That's it.
Once we start to get that ball rolling, that ball of change, it's kind of important to celebrate even the little successes, isn't it?
Well, the initial successes are going to be seen by a few and not everyone. So they definitely have to, again, that's part of communication. But I think we're all much better at criticizing than we are at celebrating.
No doubt.
And that's something that's very hard for leaders to remember at times. It's easier to find a few of the bad things than a couple of the good things. And, you know, true leaders really are working on both ends at the same time.
Absolutely. And since I would think that some of those initial successes are only seen by a few, how important do you think it is for the masses to know that, hey, we do have some small successes taking place here?
It's very critical because, again, the next time you want to change, if you limit it to a small group and you say we were successful, they're going to say, well, they were successful. And, you know, no matter the size of your company, there's always someone that is supposedly leadership at the top. And if it keeps going back that the top is the group that's successful, there's no reason for the company to be as a whole. And I think that, you know, all of us want our companies to be really a group of people as opposed to just one or two of us leading something.
Well, very good. Mike, I'm going to come back to one other point that you made in the presentation here, and that was sometimes as we're dealing with the change within the company, we realize that maybe an employee isn't the correct employee, and maybe they can't handle that change. How important is it to make a decision then to make a change possibly with that particular employee? And yeah, I think the phrase that you used was they need to be ready to move elsewhere.
Yeah. And, you know, that was regarding the values per se, but another hard lesson to learn is be slow to hire and quick to fire. And it may sound ruthless, but in the long run, you're not doing anyone any good. And once you get past the four parts of the stool I was talking about, and I'm sure that Bill has talked to you in the past about just making sure that you have the right people on the bus. It's critical that if you have someone that's in the wrong position, you're doing as much bad wrong for them as they are doing wrong for you. And people are not happy if they're in the wrong position because they know it.
I'm going to take a step backwards at this point, Mike, and take a, you know, the next question will be one of a little bit more, if you will, global in nature. And that's that, you know, your company dealt with some pretty massive shifts or large changes. I mean, when, you know, one of your products, you know, when the digital cameras came out, it was a significant impact on your company. You know, several of the industries that we're talking to today are seeing those same kind of changes, whether it's government or regulation changes or, you know, the green movement. But there's some pretty massive changes taking place within the entire trades industry. How do you deal with something like that when you really need to try and turn the ship on a dime?
Well, the larger the ship, the harder it is to turn. And that's what I talked about being the fourth leg of the stool. You really have to understand the market that you compete in and the you know, any of the factors that can impact your business. With most changes, you're going to have a chance to see them coming 6 months to 3 years ahead of time if they're that major. Economic situations are different. You can have a currency devalue overnight. You can have a war breakout, you know, the socioeconomic type things. That's a whole different ball game. But for changes, let's say, in regulatory issues, it's going to be one or 2 years at least. Hopefully your trade organization is on the hill. You're aware of it ahead of time. You're lobbying for things that need to be done in the right way. But don't wait till the last minute, because if you're one of the first people to be able to react, you're going to have that opportunity. But always remember, whatever's affecting you is affecting everyone else in your industry also at the same time. So be smart about what you're going to be doing. Try and anticipate it and have three or four options before you have to make the decision which change to actually make.
Well, that makes perfect sense. And again, a lot of those large changes that do affect the industry are things that we have a little bit of time to prepare for. I guess the key is to be looking for them, right? And take some action when you hear about them?
Take the time and you know, get involved with your trade associations. Make sure that you have two or three people that you're close with, that you do talk to. They may not be in your current marketplace, but that you trust. Get involved in groups like tech or something else. Get sounding boards or a board of directors internally that will help you, or advisory board that will help you anticipate these types of things coming. A lot of time we're too busy, and all we see is the forest. We don't see the trees.
Well, okay, you mentioned that advisory board. How important is it to have maybe some good advisors that you can trust outside of your company that can help you look at how you're doing and maybe make suggestions and give you input.
I think it's one of the critical things for a true successful business. And you don't want to just find your banker and your attorney, people that you're paying to do services for you already. They've got a little vested interest to look other directions at times. But really get some people that you have either been mentors for you or someone that you know is going to ask you some tough questions. It may not be comfortable, but you're going to establish a relationship that it's at a certain time when you need a guiding hand or a kick in the rear end, that person's going to be there and be able to help you.
Well, very good. Mike, I want to take this time to thank you for your time today and for your input and for the guidance that you've given us in this program today.
Well, Bill, I'd like to thank you also. And to the group that's going to be listening to this, I want to thank you for your time and attention. And remember, take charge of your attitude to navigate through times of change.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. The vision of Grandian Associates is quite simple. We teach contractors how to run profitable business. For more information on how we do that, check out our website at www.grandiassociates.com or give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.